Coming up on Manage Your Money God's Way, we're going to start the discussion on the pros and cons on spending. Then we'll talk about a topic that you should be planning for, whether you're 25, 35, or 55. It's called retirement. We'll help you get there with financial advice and time management advice. That's all on Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry. Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern and Sunday afternoons at 5 Eastern here on Redbox Media. Welcome to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry, where our mission is to get you debt-free. We have a 9-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Using the Bible, we will take you through the steps that it will take for you to reduce your debt down to zero and live the rest of your life debt-free. You can take a detailed look at the Bible study by going to compasscatholic.org, click on Bible Studies, and there it is, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. In fact, you don't necessarily have to have it in the parish. We have a number of people who do the Bible study in their homes with families, friends, neighbors. If you love what you see, fill out the contact form and we'll get in touch with you real quick. In the studio, we have the co-founders of Compass Catholic, John and Evelyn Bean, and today we're going to talk about the pros and cons on spending. And John, there are two conflicting statements. I have always said cash is king, but it appears that plastic is the new normal. Is this true?
This year, the Federal Reserve is going to print 7.1 billion pieces of money. That's notes, valued at almost $210 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars. 85% of that's going to replace worn out money, and 15% is going to meet the new demand requirements. So I don't think that cash is dead yet.
So we use the term cash in the United States to indicate when we're spending money minted by the U.S. Treasury, like coins or bills, which are actually called Federal Reserve notes officially, right?
The bills are, yes, absolutely.
So although cash is one way of spending, we also have many different ways of spending money these days.
Doesn't matter which way you're spending your money, that you keep track of what's the best thing that you're doing and that you're not overextending because you're spending cash here and credit cards over here and debit cards over here. If you're not being real careful about what you're doing, it would be very easy to rack up debt, overextend yourself,
get your checking account into a hole because you've overextended your debit card.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of different ways of actually spending your money. Yeah, and I don't mean, oh, you can go to the grocery store, you can go to the drug store, you can go to the department store, you can go to the big box. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the money that you're spending. How
payment methods.
The payment methods. How can you do that? And obviously, cash is the oldest way.
Yeah, the oldest way is true because you very rarely see cash. In fact, I was out to lunch with some friends today, and one of the ladies pulled out $5 bills and $1 bills and quarters and pennies and nickels and dimes just to clean out her purse in order to pay for lunch and the tip. And the waitress looked at her like she had five heads. When I was growing up, I mean, my parents used nothing but cash. What about you, Steve?
100% cash. In fact, they didn't have a checking account. I was either in high school or college when I noticed they had a checkbook.
And I remember when I was in college, the only reason I used my checkbook was to write checks to get cash.
And credit card was, I don't think, ever thought of it. They may have had a Sears card because everybody had to have
it. Yeah, that was the way you started out.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, we're going to talk about credit cards a little bit later. And I've got a quiz for you. And you better forget about what you just said because it was wrong.
Did I say something?
So you're right, Evelyn. You know, everybody pretty much used to use cash as the only method. And even today, we still encourage people who are having troubles living through their budget, their spending plan.
Living within their means
to use cash and use the envelope system that our parents and grandparents used for so many years. And it worked. I mean, they made it through the Depression having these scrubby little envelopes with the money in them. And you went to the store, you took your envelope, you took the money out. If you got to the store, hopefully you looked before you got to the store, but if the envelope was empty, then you couldn't spend any more until you were able to put more money back in, which meant the next time you got paid. It is still probably the easiest way to consolidate things and to live prevent, to your budget.
Yeah, prevent overspending.
And prevent overspending.
How difficult is it to have the people that you work with make that transition from plastic to cash? Do they buy into it quickly, or is it just you have to constantly repeat to them, try cash, try cash?
I think people use cash for different methodologies. Like one of the couples we were working with used cash for their groceries, but most of the rest of the bills they would pay online or checking or using their checks. But cash is a great thing to use for something like groceries, where it's so easy to walk in, and if you're even halfway hungry, everything on the shelf is calling out, "I taste good, buy me.
Did they find by using cash they didn't buy as much?
Yeah.
Actually, there's been many different studies that have been done that have shown that if you use a credit card, you're going to spend as much as a third more by using a credit card, because it's not like money. You know, you just whip out that piece of plastic and you're not going to spend. So it takes somebody who's really... confident,
committed.
Concerned, disciplined.
Yeah. Committed is a good word.
Committed, yeah. To be able to use a credit card and stay within their budget.
I was behind a mom and her child at the grocery store, and the little boy asked for something. You know how they have all this stuff at the grocery store at the end that tempts everybody?
Yeah.
And he wanted something, and mom said, "We don't have enough money for it." And he looked at her, and he said, "Well, you have a plastic card that does everything. It'll buy me whatever I want."
No, I find in my own case, when I go to a home improvement center, and I know I'm going to pay cash for whatever, I do stop and think, do I want this one or do I want this one that's a little less expensive?
Do I have enough money to get out of the store?
Yeah.
See, I think I'm just cheap enough that I kind of do that naturally. It doesn't matter how I'm going to pay for it, that I'm always looking to buy the least expensive version that will do the same thing.
But if you have a certain amount of money in your pocket and you know you can't go over that amount of money, there's that
thought process. Yeah, because you don't want to get up to the counter and have them ring up and say, "Oh, I don't have that much money."
Yeah.
There's no question about it. But I think you can be disciplined enough that you can handle it once you get into the swing and you've been doing it for a long time. But it's usually probably best to start with that cash system and then move forward.
But let's talk about that for a minute, because if you do have a large amount of cash that you carry around with you, it makes you vulnerable, more vulnerable than if you're using an electronic payment method where you need a PIN number or you have to have the card with you. If somebody steals that cash, you're out of luck. It's gone. There's no getting it back.
That's definitely a con. And that's not con artist. That's a bad thing about using cash. And if you're going to buy a car, as an example, and I don't care whether it's a used car or a new car, and let's just say it's probably a used car and it costs $10,000. You're going to walk up with $10,000 in cash? That's a whole lot of $20 bills.
I was thinking it was a whole lot of pennies. Yeah, so there's some cases where you absolutely cannot use cash.
Well, but I like the idea, especially if you're apprehensive about going to the cash thing, starting small grocery store, and just see how it works. And then you elevate, okay, let's do grocery store and maybe a restaurant.
Or lunches.
Yeah.
Yeah, any entertainment kind of thing.
Yeah, anything that's variable.
Yeah. And we know some people who are doing that right now. They know what their rent is every month, and they know what the rent or the mortgage. I forget whether they're buying a house or renting a house, but they know what their car payment is. They know what the insurance bills are, you know, those kind of things. The electric bill is pretty consistent. They are on a cash budget for groceries and entertainment and things like that.
Anything that's not a bigger ticket item. And you can control the cash spending just by not carrying it all around with you. I mean, you were talking earlier about the envelope system. So you put a little bit in the grocery budget, you put some in the entertainment budget, you put some in the lunches budget, and put those in different envelopes. So that's one way of not carrying huge amounts of cash with you.
Right.
So there's pros and cons to using cash. Control is a pro.
Yes.
And a con is you're vulnerable if it gets lost.
Yeah. There's no repercussions if you lose that or somebody steals it from you or whatever. The next way is by using a check. And, you know, that sounds kind of strange. Ooh, check, cash. Yeah, it's cash. And it's paper, too.
But nobody writes checks anymore.
I do.
You're such a dinosaur.
He has to put that pen that he just bought to use.
I don't write them for a lot of things. If I went back through my checkbook register, and I do, I write down every single check, which you should be doing. The recipient of probably 80% of my checks is the church.
Yeah.
Because I write out a check every Sunday.
And we put that
as
in
part
the
of the offertory.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But there's weird things where people don't like to use their credit cards, or it's more difficult to, you know, if a serviceman, the guy comes to take care of the bugs and stuff like that. Living in Florida, you got bugs, you know. It's not like where you can freeze them all out in the wintertime and you don't have to worry about them. I don't feel right giving him my credit card number and all that information, because I don't know him from Adam. You know, he's working for him today. Tomorrow he might be gone. So using a check in that kind of a situation, I think, works a little bit better. Can you think of any others, Evelyn?
Well, my hairdresser is in a group of hairdressers that rents a chair from a person that owns the salon. So she would prefer to get a check, because if she uses the credit card, she has to pay the 4% or 5% fee that the company charges her for using the credit card.
Yeah.
So she definitely would prefer checks.
So checks work out much better in that fashion.
I feel that whatever you're comfortable with, but if you can use cash, you will find better control of your spending. In fact, why not give it a try? The next, let's say, three times you go to the grocery store, try using cash in place of plastic. Now, coming up next, John's got the credit card quiz. Yeah, you can play along at home, in your car. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministry, and you're listening to us on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We are back. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. I am joined in the studio by the co-founders of the ministry, John and Evelyn Bean. And you can learn more about Compass Catholic simply by going to compasscatholic.org. You can see how we can help you not only get out of debt, but live a debt-free life. Well, today we're discussing the pros and cons on spending. And Evelyn, John has a credit card quiz for us. Are you ready?
Oh, man, I hate pop quizzes.
Pop quiz time. Get out your paper and pencil. When was the first credit card ever issued? And I'm going to give you, I'm going to make it so easy for you. It's multiple choice. A, 1935, B, 1950, C, 1958, or D, 1965.
Do Steve and I need to agree, or can we each pick a different
you
answer?
You pick a date.
I'll say 1935.
I'm going to go with 1950.
1950. Actually, Steve, you are correct.
Whoa. You get
Evelyn,
the prize.
You get no extra points today. The very first store cards came out. Actually, they were store cards. They weren't credit cards. And they were issued by oil companies and department stores in the early 1900s.
Oh, see, you didn't tell me you were making a differentiation between
stores and credit
cards.
No, you didn't know there was a differentiation.
Evelyn, stop complaining. I won. Enough said.
I want the referee on this one.
But the very first credit card was issued by the Diner's Card.
So these are credit cards that could be used in multiple locations,
exactly,
as opposed to Steve's example of the Sears card that could only be used at the Sears store.
Yes, and the oil company cards could only be used at the oil companies, the department store cards, even today, can only be used at the department stores. But the very first card that could be used in multiple locations was issued by the Diner's Card in 1950, and it was used for travel and entertainment and that type of thing. And I would imagine that some people never even heard of a diner's card because it's not very predominant in the United States anymore. It's widely used in Europe and Asia and that, but not in the United States so much. But the American Express card, that was issued in 1958. And that was the first, that's the one that has remained as the granddaddy of them all that's used way often in the United States, not so much in other parts of the world.
So the next one was MasterCard, right? And then Visa.
Yeah, I didn't even bother to look those up because they're just babies.
So is that a good way to spend money or a bad way to spend money?
Well, using a credit card isn't always a bad thing. A lot of people will say, oh, credit cards, that's bad, it's bad. Yes, it can be very bad, but it can be good also. It can be bad if you're not keeping track of your purchases, keeping track of your budget, knowing which categories you're spending in. A good thing about credit cards is that you have some capabilities. If you buy a product that fails, you can contest the charge. If you order something online and you don't get it, you can contest the charge and have it taken off. Whereas if you'd given somebody cash, they just make off with your cash and you've lost. They got your cash, you got nothing.
Well, and I know we've had a couple of instances where somebody scammed our card. There were fraudulent charges, mm-hmm. and we went back to the credit card company, and they took the charges off, and they were very good about working with us. But the bad thing is if people are charging things and not paying it off each month, because then in addition to whatever it was you bought, you're paying interest on top of that, and that interest is just wasted money.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
You know, that's a question you talked about, tracking the spending using a credit card. When you got scammed, did you notice that at when the bill came, or do you check your credit cards on a daily or every couple of times a week?
The situation I'm thinking about, we live in Florida, and there was a charge for gasoline in some weird place like Arkansas or Kansas or something, and the credit card company called us because we had just made a purchase that day earlier in Orlando. And several hours later, there was a purchase made in Arkansas or wherever it was, and they knew that we didn't have enough time to get from one to another.
Do you monitor your spending?
Pardon me?
Do you monitor the spending on the credit card?
Actually, the way the cards are now, you can set them up so that they send you an email or a text message every time the card's used or every time it's used in a particular situation, like online, where it's not available, you know, those types of things. So we get emails on a constant. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, I saw a charge pop up on my email for, I forget, $280 or something like that. And I asked Evelyn, have you spent any money on the credit card? And she said, no. I said, well, I haven't used it in at least a week, but I got a charge here, just came through. So I called up, I looked at it, and I had no recognition of the name. It was a strange thing anyway. So I called the credit card company. I said, hey, I think this is a fictitious charge. They canceled the charge immediately. They canceled my card immediately. And then the next day I got a receipt from an online software company that charges me an annual bill.
But that charge wasn't on the credit card charge, so then we had to go back and fix it.
So I now have a new credit card with a new number.
But, I mean, the good thing is in case of fraud, you do have some recourse. If there's fraud involved with your money, cash money,
yes,
you can't
yes.
do anything about it.
Well, and it just so happened that the example that you mentioned, they called the house and they got you, but it was my card that had been scammed. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in the airport in Atlanta, mm-hmm. waiting for an airplane. And so, you know, because of our ability to communicate on cell phones and the ability of the charge companies to recognize what our spending habits are, And we didn't have to pay anything. You're right. It was a gasoline charge or something for $30 or something like
that. And the other benefit, too, with a credit card is you travel, whether it's out of the state, out of the country, you can go to the website, notify them that you're going to be out of your area.
Yes.
So they don't stop your card.
Yeah. And we do that every time we travel, mostly on ministry business. But if we're going outside the United States, we let them know.
Well, and the other thing is the perks that you can get with different credit cards. Now, you have to look around and make sure that whatever the perks are is something that suits your needs. For example, we used a card that gave us airline miles, and we've used that for a lot of ministry trips. Steve, I think you and your wife use a card that contribute some amount to the 529 plan.
For our grandchildren, yep. 2% of everything that we purchase goes to a 529 plan. And I was going to ask you about that, those perks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how important is it? Is there one better than the other, like miles? Or I guess it depends on your lifestyle and what you're
going to use. It depends on your lifestyle, okay. Because we were using miles, and like Evelyn said, I think we made 5 or 6 trips. We saved them for the trips outside the United States where we're flying over the water to get someplace. And it was easier to use mileage. And we made 5 or 6 trips 100% paid for by miles. And then we haven't been doing that much overseas traveling for the ministry. And so we switched to a card that gives us points for night stay. And it doesn't have an international transaction fee. So when we use it, even if we're outside the country, we don't pay extra. In fact, we used it extensively this summer on our vacation. I didn't have any cash at all. I very seldom used cash on the vacation. I just used my card.
Now, what some people too will get a card not knowing this is an annual fee attached to it.
Yeah,
your thoughts on that?
I think it's ridiculous to pay an annual fee for a card. Depending on how much they're giving you back, I think most of the time the annual fee is more than what you're getting back on any kind of perks that are available.
The important thing to think about when using your credit card is that you should be using it only for budgeted items. And the big kicker is you need to pay it off at the end of every single month.
All right. Now, what about debit cards? Let's talk about debit cards for a minute.
When you use a debit card, the funds come directly out of your bank account immediately.
Okay. So
immediately.
So that's good because that helps you control your spending, right?
Yes. You're not spending money you don't have because if you don't have it in the bank account, your debit card is going to be rejected.
So what about protection? Do you have the same kind of protection that you have on a credit card?
No. The protection on a debit card is not as good, although it's getting better. It used to be really bad. You know, a debit card comes along with a PIN number and that kind of thing. And if a thief were to get your debit card number and your PIN number, they could go in and pretty much clean out not only your checking account, but your savings account, anything that you, any accounts that you have in that particular banking institution.
So putting a sticky note on the back of my credit card with my debit card with the PIN number is not a good idea.
You know, you might as well write it on your forehead, you know.
Give it to me, Evelyn. I'll make sure it stays safe.
All right. Now, what about prepaid credit cards?
A prepaid card is a good tool to have when you're having trouble paying your credit card bills at the end of the month.
I think that's also a good way to teach kids about money.
It's a good way.
Because we did that with our son.
And the reason that you have that is, and why it's so good, is that you actually, you know, if you're going to have a card that has a value of $500, you're going to pay the $500 before anything is spent. And then you can charge the card, and it's going to take off from that $500 that you put in. And you can have differing amounts and stuff like that.
You can recharge them, too.
And you can recharge them, put more money on there. So it's a great way. If you've got really, really, really bad credit, it's another way of reestablishing your credit and making it better.
All right. Now, what about apps like Google Pay and Wallet and Android Pay and those kind of things?
Yeah, I think they're definitely the wave of the future. A lot of internet transactions are done by Apple Pay or Google Wallet or PayPal. And I think as we go forward, that's going to be the way. A lot of retailers don't have that capability yet, but it'll come.
No matter what method of spending you choose, be sure you're budgeting and spending money wisely, not accruing debt. You need to manage the money. Don't let it manage you. Next up, we're going to discuss a topic. No matter your age, you should be planning for it now. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We are so happy that you can join us. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. Our goal, our mission, is to help you get debt-free, which in turn will relieve some of the stress that you go through. It's also going to help you to save money, which will tie in nicely with our topic today, retirement. And no matter whether you're 25, 45, or 55, you should always be planning for retirement. And in those plans, it goes beyond financial. There are other considerations that we'll get into that discussion shortly. So John and Evelyn, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry, join me today. And John, at what age did you seriously start thinking about retirement?
And when I was 25, I knew I wanted to retire between the ages of 55 and 58. Why did I want to retire then? Well, there wasn't really a good reason, but I knew that by that time I would have 30 years with the company I was working with. You know, it just seemed like it made sense. I would be able to get, after 30 years, a full pension. Unfortunately,
oh, don't even go into what happened in the meantime.
And you know, the people today, young people today, who are working, they'd probably die if they knew that they had to work the same place for 30 years or 25 years.
But at the same time, it's even more important to plan for retirement today, because all the pension plans that used to exist and the security you had with a company you worked for 25 or 30 years no longer exists.
You're right, Evelyn.
You know, a lot of people, when they think about retiring, especially if you're in a job that you don't like, the plan for retiring is not working. There's not a plan for doing something else. It's just, I don't want to work anymore.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's important, too, when you're planning for retirement, is planning what you're going to do in retirement,
working. I think that's just as important to make sure you're financially sound, because so many people that I've spoken to that are thinking of retirement, and I say, so what are you going to do when you retire? You know, I really don't know yet.
Yeah.
So I tell them, you'll be surprised. You need to be prepared.
I think it's a huge issue. And the other thing is that what you think that you want to do in retirement and what your spouse thinks they want to do in retirement could be two diametrically opposed thought processes.
John, that's why I never learned a skill. Because I knew what Audrey had in mind. I'm like, no can do. Call someone. That was my answer to everything.
Wait. What about cooking? Do you cook?
I'm on the other end of it. I can eat it. But I enjoy. But doing stuff like go out and build something, I can tear it apart. And that's as far as I get.
And I've heard you do a fine job tearing things apart. You know, a lot of people think that they'll golf or exercise or take cruises or go fishing. And that's good for a while. And it probably keeps you busy for a couple of hours a day for maybe a couple of weeks. But yeah, thinking about doing that for 30 years, and your life might just get a little bit monotonous and boring.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I look at people who are getting ready to retire, and I look at what they do in their everyday lives today when they are still employed, and there's so many of them that don't have a hobby. You know, they don't do anything on the weekends except maybe watch football or, you know, go to the beach or something like that. But
there's no volunteering going on.
There's no volunteering. The husband and the wife don't do anything together. They don't have a common. Their common interest was the children.
Or the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. But once the kids are out of the house, mm-hmm, you know, now you still have to live with that person. You still have to coordinate with them and do things with them. And it can be difficult. So I think you're right, Steve. People need to be thinking about what they're going to do. And it's just as important.
Yeah,
in fact, it controls what you're going to need from your financial standpoint.
Yeah, I talked to them about what's your passion. What do you have a passion for outside of the job if they enjoyed what they did? And that even gives them a look like, I don't know.
I don't have a passion.
And I say to you, how about charity? Do you have a charity? Well, I never had time to get involved with a charity because of work and the family.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they have an excuse for everything. They just don't have an answer for what happens
Yeah, and you know, a lot of what people think, oh, I want to travel. Okay, do you know how much it costs to travel?
And where do you want to go?
Yes.
What kind of travel do you want to do?
You want to drive around the United States, or you want to take a 3-week trip to Europe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it costs a little bit more to go to Europe for 3 weeks than it costs to live in the United States for the whole year.
Or, I mean, or something as simple as, do you want to stay in a fancy hotel, or do you want to camp? Do you want an RV?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's all those things to think through and plan for.
So let's talk a little bit about retirement finances then.
Okay.
You know, we've already said that most people aren't really into planning for their retirement. And they just are thinking about things that would be pleasurable, but they don't calculate how much money it's going to take. You know, I was probably a lot more aggressive in my desire to retire, especially as I got closer to it, because I knew what I wanted to do.
And that would be the ministry work.
That would be the ministry, you know.
But see, you're a perfect, are a perfect example of something that was drawing us into retirement rather than something that was pushing us away from work.
You know, it wasn't until I was about 40 that I began to think about the idea of working in the ministry.
Jeremiah, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. But, you know, we have seen so many couples, and we've coached several couples lately that are retirement age, but they never manage their money through their working life. So at retirement now, they don't have enough money to sustain any kind of a lifestyle. I mean, one of the men we talked to not too long ago is 80 and working full time.
Working full time, and he can't cover his everyday expenses.
And that's really sad.
Yeah. That is becoming something that's happening more and more in today's society, because people have not been saving. They have no plans for retirement other than that they want to. But when it gets time to play out the want to, there isn't any money to make it happen.
Well, how do you know how much money you have to save? I mean, how do you calculate that magic number that says I've got enough to retire?
Well, that's a $64,000 question.
But $64,000 probably isn't the right answer. Right?
That's the wrong answer. You know, and it doesn't matter how many different people you ask, how much is enough? That's the question. How much is enough? It doesn't matter how many people you ask. For every person you ask, you're going to get a different answer. Because it's different for every person.
Because it depends on your age.
Age, your lifestyles, yeah.
Your retirement plans.
Yep, exactly.
Your other obligations.
Exactly.
Like if you have a mortgage still when you retire, that's going to give you a different number than if you paid off your house and you don't have a mortgage.
Exactly. Absolutely. Or you've got credit card debt, or, you know, all these things make every individual's how much is enough number different.
So we can't give everybody a number, but we can tell them what to consider when they calculate their own number.
We can tell them how to calculate it.
Okay.
And the very first thing, and I hope you've listened to us long enough to know that you must live on a budget.
A spending plan.
A spending plan, okay? And if not, if you aren't doing that, you should start yesterday to do it. Because that's how you're going to determine what your magic number is. When you retire, you need to look at all the categories that you've been spending your money in and analyze to make sure those are still valid categories. You know, are there some categories that aren't necessary anymore?
Well, for example, you're not going to have lunch out as much, or you might have lunch out more. You're probably not going to need the same level of wardrobe. You might not have to pay tolls and parking expenses like you did when you were working.
Yeah.
Maybe your gas bill gets cut because you're not driving as far to work. So there's adjustments to be made to determine what your budget is working versus non-working.
But in reality, what we found, and Steve, you can help on this, what your budget was before you retired and what your budget is after you retired is pretty close to the same amount of money.
Almost identical.
Yeah.
And when you talk to someone about retirement, they always say, calculate 75% of what you're actually spending now. That's not true. It's almost 100%.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that.
Because Absolutely. You do find that you're out more. You're traveling a little bit more often than you did when you had a job.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing other things. So, you know, it's going to be pretty much the same thing.
So once you get the magic number, that's for 1 year, though, right, when you're looking at your budget?
Well, if you're looking at your budget, you've got 1 month multiplied by 12 is 1 year. And then you have to multiply that times how many years are you going to live? Well, nobody has that number either. That's also a big pull something out of the sky kind of number. But let's just assume you're average. When you reach 65 or when you reach 60, you're going to live until 90. Okay, so if you're 60 and you're calculating because you want to retire in 5 years at 65, so you're starting to do all these calculations, you're thinking about it in advance, good job there. You multiply that annual budget spending plan by 30, and that tells you what the magic number is. Let's just say it's $50,000 a year is your budget. Times 30, that's $1.5 million. Now the thing you have to do is check out what kind of income you're going to have when you retire.
Oh, from different sources.
Exactly, exactly. You're going to have money coming from, especially if you're in your 50s today or older, okay, you're going to have money from Social Security. You might have one or two or three different pension amounts. They won't be large, but you'll have them. And then you've got your savings. And all those numbers you got to calculate and figure out how much is that going to give you against what your expenses are.
To help you do the calculations for your retirement, we have a number of free retirement calculators on our website. Simply go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down to Money Management Resources, and click on Financial Calculators. Coming up next, we're going to start a discussion on sources for income in retirement. You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministry, and this is Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back. The name of the show is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. You can learn more how we can help you become debt-free simply by going to compasscatholic.org. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of the ministry, join me today, and we've been discussing retirement. Okay, John, you are right there, ready to call it a day. Let's look at the various types of income that may be available, and let's start with Social Security.
If you're within 5 or 10 years of retirement, you're probably still going to be able to get a monthly Social Security check. And you can find out about that if you're not receiving an annual statement. If you go to ssa.gov and click on My Social Security, and we'll put this in the show notes, all this kind of stuff, so you can look at it. You can create your own account, and you can look at, if you've been getting paper copies, you'll see all those numbers that you get on your paper copies, and it'll tell you when you're 62, this is about what your check is going to be if you start taking Social Security at 62, if you take it at full retirement, which is 66 plus several months, or if you wait until you're 70. And it'll tell you what those numbers are. And the reason that the numbers are different is that full Social Security is at 66 years plus a number of months leading up to being 67 years old. It depends on when you were born, how many months at age 66 you have to be, or at age 67. So that's full Social Security. So if you take Social Security at 62, 3 years early, you're going to lose almost 30% of your monthly check as a penalty for taking it early.
So does that mean if you take it later that you'll receive more money?
If you wait until age 70 to take your Social Security, you'll get almost 30% more as on your monthly check.
All right. Now, so who should look at this Social Security, mysocialsecurity.gov website? Is it everybody?
Everybody should look at it. It doesn't matter what your age is. To be perfectly honest, even though everybody thinks Social Security is going to go away, I think it's probably never going to go away. It might change in some fashion, but the politicos are under too much pressure to be able just to do away with Social Security. I don't think it'll ever happen.
Okay, so Social Security is one method of income. What's
that's
the next?
One. Oh, another is your pension. Some companies will give you a pension and you've had to pay into it. Some companies will give you a pension and you haven't had to pay into it. So you need to check with the HR department and find out what it is. And when you get ready to retire, you're going to have to sign a document, and they're going to give you a bunch of different choices on how to take your pension.
Okay, so what's the difference between a pension and an IRA?
A pension is paid by an employer. An IRA is money that you've saved aside as an investment, as a savings plan for your retirement. It's called individual retirement account.
So
it belongs to you.
So one of them I saved and one of them my company gave me.
That's correct.
Okay.
I get one IRA and I get two pensions because I worked for two different companies that happened to pay me pension amounts. What are the other sources of income? Well, that can vary by person. Depends on, you know, where you've worked and what you've done to save money and stuff like that. But you add up all of these numbers that are basically fixed, okay, your Social Security and your pension amounts and stuff, add them up on a monthly basis, and then compare that number to what your spending plan number is for the month.
And if I have more spending than I have money coming in?
Then you're going to have to take from your savings to make up the deficit in your budget.
Or I need to cut my budget.
Or you need to cut your budget. And that's the big eye-opener, because in most cases, the spending doesn't equal the income. Let's just say, as an example, you've got $100,000 of savings and your withdrawal amount, the deficit amount that you're going to have to take out every month is $1,000.
Well, that $100,000 is not going to last very long, is it?
It won't last a whole long time. It will last for 100 months.
Which is how many?
8 years and 4 months.
Oh, very good.
Okay. So if you retire at 65, then your money in your savings will last 8 years, 73 and 4 months.
That's if you don't do anything crazy.
And that's if you don't do anything crazy. Exactly. Exactly.
So what do you do?
What do you do? You know, that's next on my question list. What do you do? What's going to happen? Well, you got to review your expenses and make sure that everything is absolutely necessary. And that which is not absolutely necessary, you absolutely have to cut out.
So if you're doing this 5 years before you retire and you're looking ahead, that might be a good time to make a plan for how to pay off the house.
Yes.
Or move to a smaller house to cut your expenses or
yes.
something like that.
Yes, okay. Absolutely, absolutely. And then you have to, the second thing you want to do is review all your income to make sure you haven't missed something. Because you might have something that, you know, there was one pension that we didn't realize we were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a surprise because it was the biggest one of the small pensions that we get.
We could go to McDonald's twice a month on that one.
And now the other thing is, talk to your financial advisor. I hope that by this time that you've gotten a financial advisor. And the reason I say that is, you know, they can help you with various different programs that'll help you massage these numbers and stuff like that. The thing we haven't included in any of our calculations is the cost of living increases and rate of return increases. In other words, when we divided 1,000 into 100,000 and got 100, there wasn't any rate of return every month on that money invested.
So you didn't take into account the fact that we were earning interest on that money.
Precisely.
And you didn't take into account the fact that gas prices might go from $2 to $6.
Precisely.
Okay.
Yes, yes. And so when you add those numbers in, that changes it. That's a filter that you put on that's going to change the numbers. And the good news is it'll make your pot of gold a little bit bigger.
So a financial planner has all kinds of programs that can run what-if scenarios.
Right.
If you earn
right.
this, or if you spend this, or whatever.
Right. You're going to hear people say, the older you get, the more you need to be careful about where you put your money. You got to reduce the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And the less risk, the better. Well, that's not entirely true. Because if you have no risk, guess how much money you're going to gain if you have no risk.
But you don't want 100% of your money when you're retired into some real risky investment. So you need to diversify.
You must be diversified and you must have some risk. Okay. If you have no risk, you're going to get zero return. Okay.
Well, I heard some of the banks were paying like 0.5%.
No, they're paying 0.01%.
Oh, okay.
Which when you multiply it out is 0.0001, okay?
And you get steak knives.
Not anymore. You got to pay for those.
Plastic.
So you need to stay invested in the market, and there are a lot of ways that you can stay invested and earn an average of 5% or 6% or 7% without getting into a lot of risk.
And that's where a financial planner would come in handy, because they can move the money from a riskier investment into a less risky investment on an ongoing basis, so that you're not 100% no risk and 100% really risky.
100% risk.
They can, can start moving that money around so that you can take it out without impacting your long-term goals.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's really an important thing. Now, the 3% cost of living, you can kind of absorb that in your expenditures. It's not going to add up that fast. And in fact, we have maintained the amount of money that we withdraw from our savings plan at the same, actually we've reduced it but a little bit, but it's been the same for 4 years, even though there's been a cost of living increase of a couple percent each year. Those are things that are really important. But the next thing that might happen is you can't work until you're 65. What are you going to do then? Maybe you have a health situation that requires you to stop working, or you get laid off and you can't find a new job. What are you going to do then? Well, you have to do all these things earlier than at age 65. You got to create that budget. You got to analyze all your expenses. Everything that you're going to do for retirement, you have to do at that point where you can no longer work.
Which is another good reason to have a budget, because then if something like that does happen, it's a crisis and you can prepare for it ahead of time.
Exactly, exactly. And then the other thing is, what happens if now you're ready to retire, every month you've got to take some money out of your savings and investment, and then the stock market tanks? Well, that's not a good thing. I'm sorry. And you're just going to have to live with that. But, you know, it won't last forever, and it'll start to come back. In the meantime, maybe you need to squeeze down a little bit, cut your expenses and that type of thing.
And that's another reason for working with a financial planner, so they can help you avoid those risks.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you do all these things that we've talked about, you should have a pretty good opportunity for a reasonable retirement.
Retirement. It's all about planning. Planning in advance, not only financially, but plan on how you're going to use your time. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can simply go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down to radio show, and you will find today's show. Plus, you will find shows from the past year available for you to podcast. We also wrote down a lot of the information that we covered today on the show, and that's under show notes. Well, we want to thank you so much for listening. And remember, if you're in that retirement zone, that's a fun phase of your life as long as you plan ahead. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry, and this is Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.